blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Savaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Savaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Sangham Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Savaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gami Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo prajna paramita kriyaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts: not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so, not to take that which is not given, not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct, not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority, not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so, not to publish other people's faults, not to extol oneself and slander others, not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings, not to be angry, not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. O happy blessed day, O happy blessed place, O happy blessed time, O happy blessed path, O happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutyampi tatyampi sabaha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. here to end suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
Share in group something that's really witty and clever and profound and insightful, mm-hmm. and therefore I'll be more accepted by the Sangha.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I'll be, you know, be greater accepted. And because it makes me laugh, as I was just in meditation, I dropped in. I remember it was a couple of years ago, we got sent, I think it was part of one of the email classes, an audio file of one of Sherry's workshops. And she was doing a little introduction. And this is quite early practice for me. And she said, I have no idea what I'm going to say until it comes out of my mouth and I hear it.
Mm-hmm.
And that just, that was conditioned mind just freaking out. Like, she has no idea what she's going to say. How can she say anything that's going to be actually, you know, presentable or valuable?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm seeing now the whole point is she doesn't go to conditioned mind.
Mm-hmm.
She just goes to what we're practicing is our hearts or our thinking nature.
So early in your practice, you heard a recording in which Sherry said that she has no idea what she's going to say until it comes out her mouth and she hears it, and that freaked conditioning out. How can you speak and not know what's going to come out of your mouth? And what you're seeing is that she is not looking to condition mind to find what to say.
Right, yeah. And I'm just seeing during this practice training how so valuable the structure and the privileged environment is in this practice for me. There are just so few edges in my regular life that I just don't run into conditioning, and it just runs everything. because I don't know what's running it. There's no edges. And I get here and I'm like, holy God, this is insane. Like, oh, and just, at every turn I'm hitting, conditioning's hitting something. And it at first, the first couple days, it's extremely painful for conditioning. And I'm trying to step back and watch that, but at times I'm identified and I'm like, there's just no way I'm going to be able to do this again. Mm-hmm. Like, what have I got myself into? Like, you know, it's really great though when I'm not identified to see how wonderful the monastic environment, village environment, and the deacon practice training that I have the privilege to do is so valuable for my training or for my practice.
Mm-hmm. So when you're not identified, you can see the monastic training and the privileged environment is so valuable for your practice and in your everyday life. Conditioning doesn't have edges to bump up against, like at the monastery. And so you arrive here and you get to see all those edges and all those places that conditioning bumps up against.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just one last thing that I was seeing, how much I miss sitting. We sit a lot here during monastic training. And the last 2 or 3 months at home, I just saw it and I didn't realize that it had happened. Because we're seeing so much here, is that conditioning had talked me into that record and listening, replace sitting. Mm-hmm. Oh, and I just realized it certainly hasn't. There is so much in sitting that I so appreciate, and I love to. I love sitting. I really do. A big part of me loves to sit. Ego hates it, but I just saw that the last 3 months I've pretty well lost my sitting practice at home. In replace that, well, you're recording listening. It reminds me of, I think in a guidance appointment, or doesn't matter, radish or something, it was said that when we start to feel better and we're suffering less, we often drop the things that got us there. Mm-hmm. And that was what Hegel said, is, well, you're not sitting, well, you're feeling great. Because recording listening is working. Mm-hmm. And then I saw here, as we sit 4 or 5 times a day, like, oh my goodness, I got to get back to sitting at home. Mm-hmm. I'm really missing out a big part of the practice for me.
You've been appreciating sitting and seeing how conditioning had talked you into dropping your sitting practice, and that recording and listening had replaced sitting, and you're seeing here sitting so often the value of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you.
Mickey.
Well, along the lines of not knowing what's going to come out of my mouth and acceptance, on Thursday night when we were having group, I found myself, I think it was Thursday night, I don't know, whatever night it was, I think it was, and I heard myself saying that in relation to a really big piece of karma and conditioning that I have that just seems intractable, seems like it's not ever going to go away, I heard myself say that I had developed a patience with it, just knowing that it's there and that's what comes up, and that sometimes I fall for it and sometimes I don't. Mm-hmm. And as I was saying it, I was thinking, no, I haven't. I'm not patient with this at all. But ever since I said that, I've been really patient with it. It's like I talked myself into it.
So you heard yourself say the other night in group that you've developed a patience with this karma that's come up that seems like it's never going to end. And as you were saying that, and you heard yourself saying that you developed patience, you thought, no, I haven't. And yet since then, since you've said that, you've found yourself patient with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, patient and accepting of it. Mm-hmm. And it's being tested again today. Part of it is that it just doesn't take much for this body to get anxious and to have the body sensations of anxiety. So something happened in our household this morning, namely the well pump stopped working. There's a lot of sensations around what this means and how I'm going to deal with it. And yet I'm just going ahead and dealing with it and just practicing accepting that this body does that when things come up that are, you know, challenging.
So when things come up that are challenging, you've experienced that this body just has a tendency to have sensations that are labeled anxiety, and so that was tested today, and you had the experience of something happening and those sensations arising, and having patience that just recognizing that that's what happens to this body and faced with those kinds of circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also just seeing it as energy, you know. Mm-hmm. So this thing arises, and there's a mobilization and an energy that's required to see what to do about it. And mm-hmm. you know, it doesn't even have to be labeled anxiety.
Mm-hmm. And just seeing it as energy that doesn't even have to be labeled anxiety.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
I've appreciated the discussion, and I was watching myself, I think there's so much to say about this, and I was watching that saying, but let me formulate it. Let me not put my hands up yet. Wait, I'll take the jump in the game. I'm hearing a lot of acceptance, mm-hmm. and really appreciating that topic. I think one of the things that resonated for me was that place of that just seems to be what the system does. Mm-hmm. So, you know, someone earlier used that term disidentification. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, that sense of there's one experience where something's happening in life and I can really relate to the anxiety thing. So it just feels like I'm anxious and this is hard and I can't do this, and you know, there's that experience. And then there's the experience of that's still, in a sense, happening, mm-hmm. but it's almost like, I mean, yes, it's happening to me, but I'm sort of the person watching it, in a sense. So where my attention is not so much in the surviving the anxiety of what's going on, but more sort of seeing that happening, and in that, being able to assist the part of me who feels that way.
So, you're looking at how the system just does what the system does, and for you, that you were relating to the anxiety.
Yeah, and by the system, meaning me. You know, that sounds like such a big funny, but yeah. But it's using that word as an assistance in mm-hmm. seeing, well, it's not all of who I am, it's just kind of what goes on. Mm-hmm.
So using that word as an assistance to see that that's not all of who you are, it's just what's going on. Mm-hmm. And allows you to make that disidentification of stepping back and not being the person surviving that anxiety, but noticing and being able to assist that person who's surviving, who's experiencing these anxious sensations.
And, you know, it's really been, I've been talking about it a fair amount over the last, it's funny, but a part of me really is tracking it. The last 11 months now. which is sort of fun in a way that, I mean, it really, something very clear got triggered, you know, now 11 months ago. I can see now that it's been with me my entire life, mm-hmm. but for whatever reason, it was until now that I was really ready to face it completely, and that I was looking at last night or this morning or sometime how I've really been seeing, wow, it's amazing how life has sort of conspired to give me exactly what I need to go up against this, and recognizing that a piece of it is the willingness and acceptance that I'm bringing to, okay, now, let's go for it now.
So something was triggered for you 11 months ago, and seeing how it's something that's really been with you your whole life, and that it seems like life has conspired to assist you in facing this, and that part of that is the willingness and acceptance that you're bringing to it, mm-hmm. and accepting, okay, let's face this now. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which, that really helps a part of me, who feels mm-hmm. like, wow, this is really hard. And but that there are parts of me who really appreciate a project, mm-hmm. and so that assists parts of me who, because mm-hmm. it feels like, all right, this is a project, You know, and projects aren't always easy. Mm-hmm. In fact, some of the best, most fun projects have really, really challenging pieces to them. Mm-hmm. And so it feels of assistance to me in approaching it in that way.
Mm-hmm. So it feels like assistance to you in approaching it that way, viewing it as a project, and there are parts of you who like to take on projects, and projects aren't always easy, and some of the best projects have challenging pieces to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that piece of, I just really, one of the things that's helped is it's become very, very in intricate detail how this person reacts to things. And so again, that place of, now I can even like, as something happens, I can see, okay, it's really, really likely in the next 24 hours this, and this will happen. And so as those things happen, I don't know how to describe it, other than there can be an acceptance of it. Not like a, oh God, this is going to happen, I know this is going to happen, and so it plays itself out, but more, it's, you know, I can see the pattern, it's likely these things are going to happen, so when they do, there's not so much of a, oh, this is bad, and this means something, and I've done something wrong, it's just kind of, yeah. That's okay.
So in seeing the intricate detail, you can see that you recognize the pattern, so you can make I guess that in the next 24 hours, these few things are going to happen. Mm-hmm. And so there's an acceptance with that it doesn't have to mean anything or anything like that. You just accept that that's going to likely be what happens.
That was helpful when you reflected that, because the image I got as you were saying that was, so I could kind of line up my tools that I may need, and I may not need them, I don't know, but it sure couldn't hurt to have them ready, you know. So I mean, if we use like the physical example of like the well pump stop pumping, okay, might be good to have these tools that I might need to work on this thing, and you know, the first fix might completely take care of it. I don't know, but you know, I got a bunch of stuff, you know, and I'll, you know, have it at the ready, which I think reassures the parts of me who are terrified to go through this over and over again, because it's like, oh, okay, good, there's a grown up here who can help us navigate through this difficult thing.
So it reassures the parts of you who are terrified of this happening, that there's a grown up here and there are tools that are lined up, and you may not need all the tools, but you have them ready. Alex?
Okay, I don't know what I'm talking about either. I like this game. But there have been certain things that folks have said that have sparked things, like I could totally relate to the getting talked out of particular things that I say I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. Like, so my life includes this, 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 and this. And I know that doing these things are really helpful for me, and I really want them there in my life. And somehow along the way, I find myself with various random arrangements of them. Mm-hmm. You know, so there'll be this and this is still here, but somehow that and that is gone, and somehow that has come back again, and that has gone. And it's almost like if I were ever to consider that conditioned mind is running my life, and that was, you know, what is that? That's bogus. You know, I'm making the call. And I have to sit here and like wonder, who is this I that I'm calling I, and am I making a conscious decision, or am I being led around by some force that that's using my name, basically.
So seeing how in your life there have been things that have supported you, you've recognized that they support you, and then at various times only this and this are still taking place, and these other things are not, and sometimes it's the other things and not, not the first ones, and seeing that when you've made a conscious decision that those are the things that support you, then you question, who is this I making the decisions that that are these conscious decisions that...
They seem like unconscious decisions, actually. Like, there seems like there's somebody running the ship. It's not like I've gone and sat down, like, had a committee meeting or something like that and said, okay, is it true that, so sitting meditation is out the window, you know? So, like, there doesn't feel like there's actually a conscious decision. It feels like it's all... an unconscious process, kind of like along the lines of like what I heard this morning was like, you're doing this, and this, and there's like this little bargaining situation that's happening that I feel that I'm totally clued in on, but it's like I just wonder it like there should be bells and whistles that go off when stuff like that comes up, but there's really not. It almost feels like, well, this is helpful. You know, otherwise you're going to be up till 2 a.m. doing this stuff. You know, it's like, but you know, there is a way that I can work with that where it's not like, okay, well, this here is conditioned mind because it is loading me on with these rules and regulations about how to do things, and this is all helpful, and this is like, this is mentoring and this is practice. So it's really an interesting process of like. Sitting down and just getting in touch with what's going on here, you know, like where is this information coming from?
Mm-hmm. So it's a helpful process to sit down and take a look at where is this information coming from.
Because I know that I tend to veer off to the side of, schedules are really rigid and they're helpful, but somehow setting them up just seems this is the kind of conversation that I hear about it, is that it's artificial or something like that, and so I wonder about the argument that's coming up about that, and that's why it's like always so interesting in practice. It's like we're not here to come up with a formula on how to live life. It's almost like I make a commitment to do something, see how it goes, and that will inform me about how it is that I do everything in life.
You make a commitment, and then you show up and see how it goes, and that informs you on how you do everything.
Because seeing is all that we're doing here. Mm-hmm. It's like the whole basis of, that we're sitting in meditation just to see how it is that I live my life, and how it is that I get talked into doing certain things and get talked out of doing other things, and how it is that what it is that I turn my attention to provides me the life that I have.
So seeing is the foundation, and in sitting practice we get to see how it is that we do what we want in our life, how we get talked out of doing the things that we want to do in our life.
I'm reading a book. It's just some fluff fiction thing. But there's a character in it who sounds to me like me. And she's perfectly fine.
So you're reading a book and there's a character in it that sounds to you a lot like you. And what you see about her is that she's fine.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Other people in the book think she's fine. The author apparently thought she was fine. I don't really have much to say about it except something like Sangha can appear in interesting places.
Sangha can appear in interesting places.
Yeah. It's just kind of a little perspective shift.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So perspective shift.
Kind of validation.
Validation in recognizing something in a book that you see is like yourself, and all the other characters in the book think she's fine. The author thinks she's fine.
It's kind of validation is not quite the word. I think that's a little ego, but it is. It was just such an interesting experience because as I was reading her, I was judging her.
You saw that as you were reading her, you were thinking.
So as I read myself throughout the day, that tends to happen also. I don't know what else to say about it. It's just very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Thank you. Melinda?
Well, I love that. Of course, somebody wants to know what the book is, but don't tell me. And because a lot of what I've been looking at and what I've also been hearing in today's grand conversation is about perspective shift.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk all the time, and it makes sense in how we look. We talk about parts of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And there is this part who.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize we really are only each of us one alleged self. And just seeing something about, I don't know if I'll be able to articulate it, the perspective shift from I feel this way and this is what I see in the world, or I feel this other way and this is what I see in the world, and that is within awareness.
So the perspective shift of you feel this way and this is what you see in the world, or you feel this other way and this is what you see in the world too. It all happens within awareness.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. It feels like there's a lot to see in that, and it's also what I've been practicing with recently, moving to the awareness that can hold the one who's anxious, the one who has those body sensations, the one who is afraid, whatever the feeling state is the body's having.
Mm-hmm. So you've been practicing making the movement to the awareness that holds the one that has those body sensations and is feeling anxious, or whatever the body sensations are.
Yeah. Yeah, there is no self and other, it's what's going through, and it's... Within that, there isn't. There isn't. I don't know how else to. It's like there's a lot I'm seeing in it, and that is evading articulation.
So there's a lot to see in that, and what arose for you was the line from the recitation: "There is no self and other."
Yeah, yeah, and seeing that that our practice really gives us tools to expand our awareness to include, well, essentially to include life.
And the practice gives us tools to expand our awareness to include everything in life.
Yeah, and within that, in this little small whatever, being able to see the different moods, the different experiences. And there's something in there about that being able to talk about an experience that I am having, knowing it's not me.
Mm-hmm. Being able to talk about an experience that you are having, knowing it's not you.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, I just keep coming back to that. How do you say that? How do you? And it's really fun being able to make that perspective shift and to, we've talked about disidentify, but to, get a different perspective.
It's really fun to make that perspective shift and disidentify and get a different perspective.
Yeah, it's really worth working for.
Working for.
Yeah.
Thank you. Susan.
So I've been noticing something since the last retreat I got to go on.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things, so sometimes at home it's not hard for me to commit to religious things. So sitting, I sit, recording and listening, you know, I pray on my knees. I have this whole thing I do. But what I decided to add to that was to smile. I've said this, so anyway, I committed to smile. And it's been the most incredible thing. So I lie there in the morning and I wake up and my natural condition response comes in. Oh, why is she waking up at 5? And you know, I can just feel the muscles resisting the commitment. And you know, I'm just like, it's just like this incredibly painful facial contortion. I'm trying to put it into a smile. But what I have been noticing is just in the willingness to do it, even though I don't feel it, I smile a lot more during the day. And it's not, you know, with each day, it's getting easy. You know, it's just like sitting meditation. You know, every time we sit down and breathe, it gets that, we get that much more practiced at it. I don't know that it gets any easier, that ego still doesn't try to come in. But I get more practiced at staying there, following the breath. And it seems like the same thing is happening with this smiling.
So you made a commitment at the last retreat you were on to add to your morning routines smiling. And so when waking up at 5 in the morning and your first reaction is, why is she waking up, or something like that, that you can feel the resistance in your face as you keep that commitment and honor that commitment, and you're seeing that in doing so, you're smiling a lot more throughout the day.
Yes.
It's a like sitting practice, it becomes maybe not easier, but you become more practiced at it, and you're becoming more practiced with this commitment.
Yeah. And so that's one thing. And the other thing that I was, and other people are noticing, well, my family. Sophia said something, my 4-year-old, she said something like, Mom, Lynette, I don't think I said this out loud. Anyway, she said, Mom, you look like this person, Marnie, her teacher at school, who's like this person of great compassion, who smiles all the time. Like, I do. And she's, I mean, Sophie's very smiley. I mean, she smiles and she just, you can just see her soaking it in and looking closely at me like, who are you? Who took over Mom? But you don't need to reflect that. The other thing I was looking at, that was just a story. The other thing that I had happen, I thought was really funny, or I don't know, funny. I was recording, and I actually was recording into my recorder. I said, well, I have misplaced my recorder for a few days. Well, I actually didn't misplace it. It's been in my purse, so I'm recording along. So then I start recording this story that I get caught in, and I've noticed this process with this story. And what I also notice is when I tell anybody the story, it's really boring. So it's not even a compelling story. It's not that compelling to me. And so... I was recording the story, and all of a sudden, you know, I said something like, mentor, you know, or, you know, Jesus is my mentor. So I go into my, Lord Jesus, come in, you know, like charismatic history or whatever. I don't know. It just comes out of me. And so I'm talking along, and all of a sudden, it says, I mean, it was similar to the smile. Mm-hmm. It's like it was so foreign that something spoke through me and said, drop the story. Now, I've said drop the story 100 times, right? But it was not me saying drop the story. It was like, just drop the story. And everything in me, similar to the smile, is conditioned to not drop the story. You know, it wants to be facilitated. It wants me to listen to the story one more time. You know, it will use recording and listening for that end, to indulge the story. And it was like... And so then I got it. You know, I heard it. Thank God, you know. Drop the story. Do not listen. This is not worth listening to. It's not real. It's not true. All it does is cause you to leave the moment and miss. And usually I record and listen when I'm driving, when no one's in the car with me. And it just look at the trees, take a deep breath, feel the steering wheel. There is no need to indulge this story one more time, not even on your recorder. You know? It was really helpful because it gets me in that way. And then I start listening to it. And then I start thinking I need to say something to the person. And the experience is so different when I don't believe it and when I do. When I do believe it, I'm trying to figure out how to, from center, say something to take up for myself. When I drop the story, there's no need to say anything. Mm-hmm. At least with this story. You know, sometimes when I drop the story, there is a next thing to do, but with this one, there really isn't. Now, I still might. Conditioned mind, whatever, might come in and have me get caught in the story and say something next week at work. I hope I stay really present and remember that it's just a story and that right now, keep your mouth shut. You know? So anyway, it's just been fun to physically play with those, not going with the old conditioned responses to the story.
So you really heard this time. You've heard yourself say many times, drop the story. And this time, it felt like it came through you, and you heard it and got it, and saw that this story that you were repeating to yourself and repeating onto your recorder, that you could just drop it, and there was no need to do anything. You could look at the trees and feel the steering wheel and be present in that moment, and indulging that story just was not helpful. And you really had a felt experience of that.
Mm-hmm. And very grateful.
Thank you.
Cameron? In kind of preparation for the email class that's coming up, I've been doing a little reading about the Enneagram.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't thought about it much for quite a while, and it's kind of fitting into what we're talking about, kind of the perspective change and the stepping back. To read that there are basically 9 ways that human beings have of seeing themselves as separate, and we all have a little bit of all 9, but there's one that's particularly hooks us, or that we're particularly vulnerable to, and basically that's it. You know, I mean, in looking at things through this system, and to me it was just like one of those perspective changes, you know? It's like everything kind of is all personal and all this stuff's going on, and then, you know, to step back and look at a system like that where basically we come in not feeling separate, and then, you know, there's some kind of, this book, particular book, I only have one right now, talks about there's this an experience of a lack of holding. Holding meaning being embraced by, in some way, our environment. And that leads to an experience of separation. And there's kind of 9 basic ways of that, and they lead to ways of coping and stuff. And I have just found it really refreshing to have a way of looking at it in such a kind of a concrete way from outside of it. And it is providing a perspective change, I guess, or something like that, a way, and also a sense of acceptance, too, that we've been talking about today.
So you've experienced a perspective change and an experience of acceptance in looking at the Enneagram, this system of the 9 different orientations that people come in and have. And that it was refreshing to look at it in such a concrete way, and where typically things happen and they're taken personally, mm-hmm. than to have a perspective change of stepping back and seeing how there's this system operating.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it felt like a real way to kind of disidentify from mm-hmm. from a sense that it's complicated or that it's big and hard or whatever. You know, it's kind of like has offered an opportunity to be kind of stepped back, disidentified, mm-hmm. Observing something that was used earlier, observing and feeling like from that position of observing, there's an ability to kind of feel clear about what's going on and also to assist from that place rather than being the part who's experiencing the lack of holding or whatever it is that might be going on.
So taking that step back and disidentifying allows you to get clear and assist mm-hmm. the person who's experienced that lack of holding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's really marvelous the way our practice, you know, it just brings in tools from all over the place, you mm-hmm. know. So, you know, you get kind of used to looking at something from a certain perspective, then something else comes in, and it's kind of like a different way of looking at it, mm-hmm. and it's kind of like brings a different perspective or a different focus or just kind of a new way of looking at it, a fresh way of looking at it that just mm-hmm. sort of changes things enough that it's kind of perks things up in a way that brings a different clarity.
Mm-hmm. So having something come in that allows you to look at things with a fresh perspective mm-hmm. perks things up and allows you to look with clarity.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like in this practice that's something that keeps happening. You know, there's always something new being brought in a different way to approach practice, you know, or to look at things.
Thank you. Krista.
Well, I don't know what I'm going to say, but I know that I like some freedom around something.
Mm.
So, this morning, I'm having this really... Well, you'll understand this. I have to go to 3 parties this weekend. I've only gone to 1 so far. And, you know, I don't have to stay that long. I've been good lately, that was the first one really, but still, having to go to parties is just not my idea of a great weekend. And, because, you know, every day is like a party for me. I talk to people all day long. And so, at least then I'm talking about things that I care about. And I don't even have to fake interest. I'm really interested. But so there's something about having to go to these parties and then I'm doing food and, you know, and it's like there's this part of me that goes on part of the community and I get to help out and all that. And then there's this other part of me that is hysterical. And the hysterical is that there's not enough time. And there's basically not enough.
Mm-hmm.
And we can just fill in the blank of what there's not enough. Now, you know, I was just on this drive to Bay Area, so I listened to the NPR, which I hadn't listened to a long time, but let me tell you, the economic news is not good. So now there's not enough money, and I have a ton of fear around there not being enough money. So there's not enough money, and there's a future. There's no good future where there's enough money. And now there's not enough time because there's all these parties in there. So when I look at my week, which usually has like a day in it where I do a different kind of work, that day doesn't exist now. Every day is all day, like, is scheduled. Then now there's not enough time, and then there's stuff that I have to do that it's hard for me to do. So then there's procrastination and fear, and it all leads to huge anxiety.
Mm-hmm. So you've been looking at the part of you who gets hysterical, and
no, I haven't been looking at it. I've been being it. Well, that's a joke. Some of both.
Some looking at, some being the
hysterical with not enough, mm-hmm. and it could be not enough time, not enough money, just not enough.
Yeah.
And in particular this weekend, not enough time with these parties that you have to go to.
Okay.
And then I have a fear that comes in, which is when I do have discretionary time, which there is, that I won't be able to get myself to focus on the things that I want to focus on that will make the biggest difference.
Mm-hmm. You have a fear that with the time that you have, you won't be able to focus on the things that you want to focus on that would make the biggest difference.
Mm-hmm. So I've been in my life lately, I think maybe since the retreat we did in May, I can't think of what it's called right this second, but I actually was very inspired by something you said about I'm not going to make any lists in my head. And so from that, some weeks I'm successful with that and other weeks I'm not. But what I have consistently been successful with is looking at what there is to do and making choices based on what will reduce the anxiety the most.
So what you've been successful at is looking at what there is to do and making choices based on what would create the least anxiety, is that?
Well, what would help reduce it the most?
Help reduce it the most.
Yeah. Which is different from create the least anxiety.
Yeah.
Sorry. It's like this given, you know, it's sort of like, okay, it's summer, it's hot, the, you know, and there's anxiety. You know, it's just like this fact of life.
So the anxiety is the given, and you've been finding some success at looking at ways in which to reduce the anxiety the most with what you choose to do with your time.
Yeah. And there is actually, I see as I talk about this, that there's a shift that I hadn't acknowledged before, which is my whole life, the way that I've managed that is to work out really hard. And, you know, it served me well working out. But... I don't, like this morning, one of my solutions is not, well, I don't have time to work out. If only I had time to work out, then I wouldn't feel this way. Like, that whole conversation isn't going on. Like, I don't think that's the solution.
Mm-hmm.
That's the maturity right there, isn't it?
So you've had a strategy with dealing with the anxiety with working out.
Yeah.
And you've seen some maturity in that you don't have that conversation where you think that that's the solution.
Yeah, that's not entirely true, actually, because I do have a little bit. I do believe somehow if I had not all this stuff to do and time to work out, then I wouldn't feel this way. And it's feeling this way that's the problem.
Mm.
So feeling this way is the problem.
Yeah.
There is still part of you who thinks that if you had more time and were able to work out, then you wouldn't feel this way.
Right. And I feel like even in talking about it, that I'm still like pointing at something that I haven't seen yet. That
mm-hmm.
all of this, that there's some deep layer of conditioning around like a deep belief that if I were somehow magically a different person, I wouldn't have this life experience.
Mm. So you think that there's something that's pointed at that you're not seeing around this, that there's a deep layer of conditioning, something about if you were a different person, then you wouldn't be having this experience, this life experience.
You know, it's something like that, but that's not it either. It's something more that a desire for the human experience to be other than this.
Desire for the human experience to be something other than this.
Yeah. And it could also be as simple as, well, one thing that I see is that so a lot of my life is focused on being a support to other people. And And the truth is, when I'm doing that, then this anxiety experience doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of your life is spent being a support to other people, and when you're doing that, this experience of anxiety doesn't exist.
Right. And so sometimes I think that maybe it feels like maybe that coming back to then something with me and how I support me then creates there's a shift that happens from like focusing outward and giving to focusing inward and giving, or like focusing inward and wanting, mm-hmm. that creates this. It's not focusing inward and giving to that part of me, it's focusing inward and not yet giving and just wanting.
Mm-hmm. So there's the experience of focusing outward and giving, and then the experience of focusing inward and not giving but wanting.
Yes, I think that might be the ultimate, mm-hmm. the underlying, not ultimate, but that I can see the underlying cause of the actual anxiety. Mm-hmm.
The underlying cause of the anxiety is focusing inward and having the experience of wanting.
Yes. That would seem to be it. And then so much of the procrastination can be what happens to keep me from actually giving and receiving for myself.
And so the procrastination is keeping you from focusing inward and giving and receiving within yourself. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of conditioning about it's funny, I mean it just keeps repeating itself, like, you know, I don't sleep properly, so you know, I was awake well at 3:30, and then I think then I got at 5, but I didn't get up for a long time because there's some belief about needing to lay there, but then I ran out of time. Where, you know, and what I find consistently is if I just get up in that space without time pressure, that's when I actually give and receive mm-hmm. with myself.
Mm-hmm. So you found that when waking up early and there's a belief that you need to keep lying there, but if you get up, your experience is getting up gives you what you need to take to give and receive within yourself.
Yeah. Because to give and receive within myself with time pressure is much trickier. Mm-hmm.
To give and receive within yourself with time pressure is trickier.
Yeah. So then I get to maintain that same place of wanting.
So you get to maintain the same place of wanting.
Yeah, and it seems like wanting seems to be a big piece of the puzzle of the anxiety.
Mm-hmm. And wanting is a big piece of the puzzle of anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the truth is when I do just get up regardless of the amount of sleep that I have had. And I do have that space without time pressure to truly be and give the kind of energy to myself that I give to other people. Mm-hmm. That changes everything. Mm-hmm.
So when you do get up and you do give to yourself the kind of attention and support that you give to other people, that makes all the difference.
Yep. I wonder how many more times I have to see that. We could take like a bet. We could take a bigger bet. You
know, to your recorder.
Yeah.
I just really appreciated that because it reminded me. I had forgotten about the guy on the radio show the other day who said that he has come around in life to having just one thing on his mm-hmm. to-do list, mm-hmm. which is take care of himself. Mm-hmm. Everything else goes on the could-do list. Mm-hmm. It's just like that. Is so mm-hmm. to remember that. Mm-hmm. So I'm grateful to be reminded.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mickey?
Well, I probably won't be able to say it as well as Krista just did, but I really, really resonated with me when she said something along the lines of the desire to have the human experience be other than it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, yeah. That's what goes on with me a lot of the time, you know, and that a lot of the what I experience is the bracing against the things that will happen that, quote, shouldn't happen. And just a huge orientation to life that I either was born with or was taught about things should always be really good and perfect and nothing should go wrong, and actually things go wrong all the time, which just points out how things are not the way they should be, rather than just things happen and we deal with them, you know? I mean, it's just colors my experience of life so much to think that things that happen shouldn't be happening.
It colors your experience so much to think that the things that are happening shouldn't be happening, and that you either were taught or came into this life with the orientation that things should be good and perfect, and then the experience is there are things going wrong, and that just is evidence or proof that the things aren't happening the way they should happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you experience a bracing against what could happen.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, when I can relax into things happen, and they happen to everybody, and it's not personal, and, you know, sometimes they're painful, and sometimes they're not, but this is just, that is the human condition, and there isn't anything wrong with that. I mean, it's such a much more spacious place to live than, oh my God, now what?
When you can relax into things happen, and it's not personal, and sometimes they're painful, and just relaxing into that experience, it's a much more spacious way to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you.
I don't know quite what I'm going to say. My type, the way I experience it, has a built-in buffer against discomfort. And so when things happen, quote-unquote, that someone of a different type might experience as distressful, anxiety-producing. That thing in me, that buffer that my type seems to have, and there are others of my type in here who might let me know if they have the same experience, just deadens it. It has to be big and really, really distressing to get through that buffer, you know.
So your Ennea type, as you experience it, has a built-in buffer against things that, quote, happen, that to other types might be distressful, but it, and there's this buffer that deadens it, so it has to be something really big to get through that buffer.
Yeah. Or it has to just happen repeatedly, over and over and over. And then the response to it is anger, which is also quickly squelched. Or it leaks out and makes other people unhappy. So when I look at that, what I hear go through my head is, I shouldn't be like that. I should feel what everybody else feels. Or in the moment when something arises, I should be ahead of that buffer and not let it do that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how to do that. Mm-hmm. And or whether that's a thing to do, really, that needs to be done, or whether I'm fine as I am. You know, I don't know. It's just how it is. I suppose sitting here looking at it, not taking it personally, it's not personal, it's karma. Mm-hmm. It's, as was stated earlier, one of the 9 ways of feeling separate. Maybe I should be happy that it's there. Or it just, I suppose, like with everything else, just in the moment be aware this is happening, this is what's going on, this is how the system handles this thing, and let it be.
So just in the moment to be aware that this is happening and this is how this person with this orientation reacts, and to just let it be.
Yeah, because most of the time a huge part of me is quite content not to be anxious and upset about stuff. And so it's hard to say, no, we need to be anxious. No,
someone likes not being anxious and upset about things.
Yeah. You know, and sometimes it's truly, it feels like it's a more centered response.
It's
a more centered response. And sometimes it feels like that Enneagram type deadening mechanism.
Mm-hmm. So sometimes it feels like a centered response, and sometimes it feels like the Enneagram type deadening reaction.
Yeah. And so again, I guess the practice is just to be aware.
So the practice is just
what's there, what has happened, or what is happening. Or
just be aware of what just happened, what is happening. Thank you. Thank you all.